and to assure that they would be relevant not only for lawyers, but for the general citizenry, and for those of you who would like a primer on constitutional law in this area, whether a lawyer or non-lawyer, there's a session for that. We'll also have some discussions on the importance of civility as public debate on these issues goes forward. There has been a tendency, a risk, for debates to become shrill, even violent at times, and I think that is clearly something that needs to be avoided. Tomorrow we will have a discussion led by some of those who played leading roles in the same-sex marriage litigation in the Supreme Court. But we hope that the same-sex marriage issues will not eclipse other vital religious freedom issues. Many of us have just returned from a conference celebrating the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. And among other things, the opening section of that great document laid the foundation for the liberty of the church, or what we nowadays call church autonomy or religious autonomy. That is the right of the religious community as a whole to determine itself. One of the highlights of this conference will come tomorrow afternoon when we will be hearing the story of a lawyer, Dino Ware, who handled what was, to my mind, one of the most significant religious freedom cases of the last half century. It was significant because in a very divided time, it affirmed unanimously the right of religious communities to autonomy in their own affairs, in choosing their employees, in choosing those who represent them. And we will hear the story of Dino, who handled that case, the Hosanna Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church and School versus EEOC. He'll tell us his story, which I think to many of us has become a great example of how a normal citizen can play an absolutely critical role in religious freedom, particularly by joining with others and working together in support of this great right. Finally, we will have some sessions that focus on what is happening internationally. However concerned we are about religious freedom in this country, it's been a long time since people have been killed or driven from their homes here. As we look out on the world, we see much more serious and troubling situations. So, going forward, let me just say a few things about some of my major concerns as the director of the center here and as someone who is deeply committed to the principle of religious freedom. It's clear that public discourse on these issues is going to go forward. It will go forward after the Supreme Court decisions last week. Indeed, Justice Kennedy's opinion in Obergefell affirmed that we will continue to have the right to speak. There was some criticism that this was a little weak and could have been stronger. But there's a long tradition in this country of continuing to debate closely divided issues, even when constitutional judgments are rendered. Think of Roe versus Wade. Think as well as a more recent case like Citizens United about campaign finance. No one suggests that the fact that there has been a Supreme Court decision requires that debate on these issues should cease. So point one going forward is that we can expect ongoing discourse. One of my hopes is that we can contribute, and I mean we in the collective sense of those here and a much larger group of people, that we can contribute in competent ways to this public discourse. That requires becoming educated about the issues. This requires more than reading a few newspapers. It requires, I think, greater in-depth study. I've been teaching in this field for going on 40 years, and I continue to feel overwhelmed by the massiveness of this field. On the other hand, as we will demonstrate as we go through this, there are practical things that people can do. I think that in addition to educating ourselves, we need to think seriously about being peacemakers, to find ways to contribute to conflict depolarization instead of conflict amplification. This is, I think, going to be an increasing challenge, because the issues are hotly contested, people feel passionately about them, and the views are deeply divided. But I think while there are voices at the extremes, the militants, the zealots, I think one of the great things about American society, at least, is there's always been a broad middle where people come together and find ways to live together in peace and security, even though they may disagree. I have become convinced that one of the fundamental things about religious freedom is that it plays a role in diffusing fear. One of the reasons behind the recurrent, what I call the persecution syndrome, the tendency of people to call for religious liberty until they get power and then to try to revoke it for others. I think that's one of the great tragedies of history. It's a tragedy that we should learn from. I think part of what causes it is that everyone feels threatened. The people in power feel threatened that they will lose power. People who have just acquired new power feel that it will quickly slip from them again. And those fears can be catered to and expanded by media that is often too anxious to stress the extremes, the conflict, rather than the possibilities for peacemaking. There are a lot of factors that contribute to the problems. But I think that religious freedom plays a very significant role, because what it does, if you have people that deeply believe in that idea, it communicates that people will be safe in their most fundamental beliefs. If you want to really know what makes pluralistic society possible, a society where people have genuine freedom of choice, have genuine options, what makes it possible most fundamentally is a level of trust that even if others disagree, they will be protected by religious freedom. This is why in the international instruments, religious freedom is one of the few rights that is non-derogable, even in times of public emergency, because I can tell you, coming out of public emergency is relatively impossible if you do not have a firm sense among people that they will be safe in their fundamental beliefs. So religious freedom is one of the powerful tools that has been identified, developed in Western society in particular, but has spread worldwide, which, if implemented effectively, will help stabilize peace, will contribute to stability, will contribute to all kinds of other social goods. So I think that is my major hope. Let me just add one other thing. My wife came across a quotation from Cory Booker, the Newark mayor, this weekend, which she shared with me, and I think it goes to something else that I hope we will be able to exemplify. He says, This is a mayor that has copies of the Quran, the Bible, the, you know, the Torah, a lot of different, someone who's symbolically committed to religious freedom. He says, "Don't speak to me about your religion. First show it to me in how you treat other people. Don't tell me how much you love your God. Show me in how much you love all God's children. Don't preach to me your passion for your faith. Teach me through your compassion for your neighbors. In the end, I'm not as interested in what you have to tell or sell as I am in how you choose to live and give." I think that's a great reminder for all of us. just as our church leaders have, on the one hand, stood for principle, but have worked to show respect and to find compromise, so one of my hopes is that we will learn how to follow that example and be competent peacemakers, doing much to end the fear-mongering of our times. Now, in addition to, I have two additional tasks that I need to do while I'm speaking. One is I need to just talk about some of the mechanics of what's happening today. So let me first do that, and then I need to introduce Matt Richards. So first, ground rule is civility. So bear that in mind. I don't anticipate any problems on that front. We will have questions at the end of sessions with mics going to those asking questions. Please do state your name and wait for the microphone because the sessions are being taped and videoed. Let me also just say we've asked the speakers to sign waivers because we are taping things. It's a little harder to get waivers signed by all 300 of you. So we're going to assume that people do not object to the main videotaping and so forth will be aimed up here, but there will be some casual shots going on and so forth. If you have objections, let us know. We'll do what we can. It's a little bit, you've come into a somewhat public sector, and we hope this won't be a problem for anyone. If it is an issue, the one thing you don't want to do is stand up and ask a question and have the cameras focus on you. If that's an issue for you, send a question to the aisle to the people carrying the mics, and we'll try to take questions that way. That may just be a concern out of abundance of caution, but let me pass that on. Now, I should say that the breaks, I confess in a certain sense, I don't believe in 15-minute breaks. I've never quite seen them happen. And it will be harder with a group this size, but we encourage you to take advantage of breaks quickly and get back. Restrooms are in the halls on the two ends of the building toward the back of the building. but try and get in and out. Among other things, for those who are lawyers, they are getting continuing legal education credit, and the bar requires that we really run the sessions for an hour, and that depends on sticking quickly with the timing of the sessions. These sessions, as I say, are being taped and videoed, and we anticipate that they will be available online within a relatively short time. more can be said at the lunch at noon. The lunch will be in the room next door. There will be this will be served smorgasbord style, so go in, there will be multiple lines, and we urge you to go in and take your seat promptly because we do have a really wonderful luncheon speaker. Okay, now with all that said, let me turn and just briefly introduce Matt Richards. He's a shareholder at the firm of Curtin & McConkie, was educated at the J. Reuben Clark Law School, where he was a lead note and comment editor of the BYU Law Review and graduated magna cum laude with the Order of the Coif. Matt is someone who sees beyond the ordinary pressures of legal practice and litigation and has managed to make significant contributions to thinking about megatrends in religious freedom, and that's one of the reasons he is speaking to you today. In a day when many take religious freedom for granted or have forgotten its importance, he leads off in sharing some of his work on why religious freedom remains our first freedom, a freedom truly foundational for just government everywhere, not only here, but abroad. He has been awarded or designated as one of the super lawyers in business litigation in the region. He was not sure how seriously we should take that, but I think it's a fitting bit of praise for him. He's certainly been a super lawyer in my eyes. Thanks, Matt.